cooperation over chaos. We are all in this together.
The Sustainable Hour.
For a green, clean, sustainable Geelong, the Sustainable Hour.
Welcome to the Sustainable Hour podcast. We'd like to acknowledge that we're broadcasting from the land of the Wathaurong people. We pay tribute to the elders past, present, and those that earn that great honour in the future. We're broadcasting from stolen land, land that was never ceded, land that was nurtured, not owned, but nurtured by the Wathaurong people for millennia before it was stolen. And in doing that and in nurturing their communities, they've accumulated a great amount of ancient wisdom. The same wisdom that we're going to need to survive the climate crisis.
Imagine a household spending three quarters more than they earn every year. So for instance, let's say if my household was earning $100,000 a year, but we're spending $175,000 a year. That family might appear comfortable for a while, living it up, nice house, holidays, the fridge is full. But underneath the appearance of normality, assets are disappearing and debt is growing with $75,000 every year. That's exactly the kind of situation humanity finds itself in today. Last Thursday, it was Earth Overshoot Day. That's the day when humanity had used as much from nature as nature is able to regenerate during this whole year. And we reached that point already here at the 30th of July. So everything we consume from now on up to New Year adds to our ecological deficit or debt. More forest cleared than can regrow. More fish caught than populations can replace. More carbon released than forests and oceans can absorb. So we're now using nature 73% faster than Earth can regenerate it. Here in Australia, the picture is even worse than that. If everyone on Earth consumed resources the way we Australians do, Overshoot Day would have arrived already in the middle of March. We would need almost five planets for everyone on this planet to be able to live like we Australians do. And of course, we don't have five planets. So, where do all these extra resources come from? Well, you could say they come from the future. We take them from future forests, from future fisheries, future soils, future water supplies, and importantly, from future generations. And I haven't even mentioned the CO2, the carbon problem. People seem to think that we can just wait and then when it gets too bad, we can then reduce emissions and things will get better again. But that's not how it works. We can't make it better again. What we can is we can prevent it from getting even worse. That's it. If we stop our emissions, it's like, you know, again, if you compare it to a house, it's like stopping the water after the house has already been flooded. And yes, it's important that we stop the flow of water. Every centimeter of water we prevent matters. But the house has still been flooded. Every fraction of degrees of heating matters. Every forest, every reef, every community, every species that we protect matters. Some ecological damage can heal, of course. Forests can regrow, rivers can recover, landscapes can be restored. But many other losses are permanent, at least on a human timescale. A collapsed ecosystem, we can't just refinance it. An extinct species, they'll never return. A climate which has been wrecked by our centuries of fossil fuel pollution will not simply reset when politicians eventually decide, oh, this situation is getting a bit uncomfortable, it's getting very hot, you know, and very expensive. And even so, politicians, the media, and the entire economic system here in our society, everyone continues to treat this as some kind of a side issue. We hear, of course, media reporting on the damage, but no one is talking about the repair, what we need to do. So Overshoot Day is a reminder that something eventually will have to go. This is not even up for negotiation. The planet will not negotiate. You can't negotiate with the physics. The bill will not disappear, even though we refuse to open the envelope. That's a bit about the long-term global outlook from me. The reality that I think we need to face sooner or later, but better sooner than later. For now, here in the Sustainable Hour, it's time to catch up with the latest news from around the globe. And at our news desk, as usual, we have Colin Mockett, OAM. And I'm hoping, Colin, I'm just hoping that you have got some good news for us today. Colin?
Oh, I'm sorry to disappoint you, Mick. Usually I've got something, a little bright light of hope at the finish, but today it's all glum. So I've opened the envelope already and I've seen the bill. So here it is. My roundup this week begins in England, where hundreds of people were evacuated last week and a major disaster was declared after a wildfire spread over more than 80 hectares on the coast of Suffolk. Now, that's not particularly big by Australian bushfire standards. What made this one so serious was that the fire front was just a few kilometres from the Sizewell B nuclear power station. So it tripped them all over into panic mode in the UK. The fire, described by one witness as apoplectic, was still not completely under control as of last weekend, though weather conditions had eased. Suffolk Fire and Rescue's John Lacey said the wind change has helped a little bit unexpectedly. Whether it's actually under control, I wouldn't commit myself just yet, but we are surrounded by resources to protect property and life. That out-of-control fire came a day after Britain's new Prime Minister, Andy Burnham, declared the nation to be officially in drought. Elsewhere in Europe, Greece continues to battle to contain a spate of wildfires, including the tourist island of Crete that forced thousands of locals and holidaymakers to evacuate and left three firefighters dead. Now, this was while France had a short reprieve from some of the worst fires in that country's history. The blazes in France killed two firemen, destroyed more than 200 homes, and burnt 42,000 hectares. In all, Europe has been suffering through a brutal summer. Western Europe had its hottest on record, with temperatures more than 3 degrees above average. As of late July, we could say last week, more than 330,000 people had been evacuated from their homes across France and Spain. That was all due to fire. Data from a study still underway suggests that a combined excess death toll across Europe during the extreme heat of last summer was more than 27,600. French river water, used as a coolant for nuclear reactors, posed a risk as heat-related restrictions saw the Golfech 2 nuclear reactors in southern France taken offline since July the 9th. Now, are you listening, Angus Taylor and the other right-wing coalition politicians that are still advising us to ditch renewable energy and go nuclear as an alternative to burning fossil fuels? It has all kinds of dangers, fellas. We should not do it. Now, the current conditions in Europe are seen as a preview to the new normal, and it serves as a warning for what's ahead for us in the Australian summer. That's because an El Nino event is intensifying in the tropical Pacific Ocean. which is forecast to increase the frequency and intensity of heat waves, droughts, fires, and destructive storms in the summer ahead. El Nino events are part of a natural cycle that plays out every 2 to 7 years, but they are now occurring on an Earth that is blanketed by fossil fuel emissions. Because this El Nino will release stored ocean heat into a climate that's already warmed by greenhouse gas emissions, scientists are warning that global temperatures are almost certainly to reach new records in 2027. It's no overstatement to say that the latest El Nino forecast has scientists worried as we move further beyond the bounds of our historical data. When the latest climate model forecasts were released, American scientist Zeke Hausvater wrote, "I'm generally pretty measured in how I discuss climate data, but it looks like this year's El Nino is not only very likely to be the strongest event since reliable records began, it may end up the strongest by a truly mind-blowing margin. There is inherent uncertainty in any form of modelling, climate, economic or otherwise. But when more than 90% of 667 simulations run across 14 different seasonal forecasts models, they all predict record-breaking temperatures, you know you are entering uncharted territory. Ocean temperatures are predicted to peak next year at 3.6 degrees above average, topping the all-time high of 2.75, they're all in Celsius, these are, during the 2015-16 El Nino. That was the last El Nino we went through. Now, what sets this year's event apart is that it is forming in an ocean that has never been hotter. This June was the warmest the Pacific has recorded since 1900. The entire ocean has warmed due to climate-caused greenhouse gas emissions, so the models tend to overstate the strength of recent El Ninos relative to the historical record. Even correcting for this, the forecast peak is still a record-breaking 3.1 degrees centigrade. We are bearing witness to monumental changes that future researchers will look back on as a period when the Earth's climate slipped off its moorings and into treacherous waters. It's still too early to know exactly what this El Nino will bring to Australia. What we do know is that so far this winter has been warm and wet across much of the southeast of Australia. According to the Bureau of Meteorology, El Nino is now firmly established and likely to last until at least summer, with the models tipping a strong to very strong event. The BOM is also careful to note that a strong signal in the Pacific does not necessarily mean strong impacts in Australia. It's only one of many influences on our climate. Models currently suggest a cooler than average eastern Indian Ocean developing over winter and persisting into the spring, which could lead to the classic hot and dry conditions in southeast Australia. Now, this could herald another bad bushfire season for the south, which includes Victoria. And that piece of measured scientific warning ends my roundup for this week.
Listen to our Sustainable Hour for the future.
Thanks for that, Colin. As you said, not a lot of good news in amongst that. The thing that stood out for me is that the number of people that died, but we also need to take into account that each one of those are real people with real loved ones, and their lives have been turned upside down. And it's not mentioned in the mainstream media or the fact that it's connected intricately with the climate crisis. Yes. That's just astounding. And it shows that still the influence that the fossil fuel psychopaths have when they still keep producing their toxic products. day after day.
Yeah.
Anyway, on with the show. Our guest today is someone we know quite well, but he's going to speak on in another with another hat on, I guess. So it's our co-host, Mick Ait. Mick has just written a book that, let's get straight into it. Mick, what's the book? Why was it written? And that'll start us off.
Yeah, Tony, thanks. It's kind of funny to be in the chair of being the interviewee. Yes, the book is called Man of Earth. Man of Earth. And the subtitle, Masculinity, Meaning, and the Future of Being Human. And that's a big mouthful, but it exactly relates to what you just talked about there, Tony, the men in the fossil fuel industry. Because I think one of the basic questions that I have been asking myself for more than 10 years is, what is driving all this madness? If we dig down underneath and really seek the answers to how did it get this bad and how is it even possible, I think what my book is an attempt to do is to explore the underlying values, you could say, or lack of values, and the kind of system that we have in the Western society. And then to ask, where did that come from? If we go back in history, can we find some traces? Because if we don't have an understanding of that, I think what we're seeing as climate activists is that we're dealing with something here that is more than just dealing with some psychopaths who have got a bit of money. Yes, but there's something deeper down that we are up against. And I think, this is my claim, and this is what the book is about, that men's attitude, you know, the masculine attitude towards the world as somebody who is in charge, somebody who dominates, somebody who has to be successful and make a lot of money, etc., etc. That is where it all begins. That's the claim. And so my starting point was actually I was looking, you know, I have attended hundreds of meetings which all have nature or climate as the headline. And when I look around in the room when I attend these meetings, it's become more and more striking for me that 8 out of 10 people in the room would be women. And I'm saying that just as an average, of course. Sometimes it could be 7, sometimes it could be 9. But sometimes I'm the only man in the room. And I wonder, where are the men? What's going on here? Where are the men? So I started to do some research. And first of all, I learned that it's true. All statistics show that men really don't participate in community activities and so on. And secondly, that men are not really, you know, as worried about the climate as the women are. Then I started to go deeper and say, what is that about? What is it with the women? And I learned that there's all sorts of movements, actually, where, for instance, there's something called the divine feminine, where women are coming together and really looking into what it means to be a woman, a life-giving, empathetic, caring, and community-focused person. And I started asking, well, me as a man, where's my movement? Well, all the women are getting ready for the next step, which is that we need to move away from fossil fuels. We need to move towards a more ecological future. What are the men doing? Do they have the equivalent? And my answer was actually, no, the men are in trouble. The men are hurting. When you look at all the different statistics that are, especially here in Australia maybe, for instance, just one simple one, suicide rates. Men are killing themselves 3 times more often than women. Violence, prisons. 90-something percent of the people who are in prison are men. So what's going on here? And that's where, you know, I started getting curious and started wanting to seek some answers. And my God, you know, it really opened up what's called a rabbit hole. So I disappeared into a rabbit hole and I came back up 3 months later feeling a lot more enlightened in a way, but also inspired because it's given me a new, fresh outlook on what it means to be a climate activist. And that has to do with, I think we need to totally forget about the word climate. And then we need to start talking about life in general
because that's what men are interested in. They are actually interested in life.
That's really good. I want to know, though, Mick, when you came out of your rabbit hole and you had a clearer understanding, can you encapsulate that into just a couple of words? Because so far you've asked lots of questions. Did you eventually come up with a few solutions or answers, or is that the next book?
I think I did, but you'd have to read the book to tell me whether you agree. I did try, Colin, but I must say that in the beginning I was thinking, I'm not going to write one of these books, you know, these kind of self-help book where you get all the answers on a list, 1 to 10, this is what you do and everything will be fine. I was more interested in asking the questions, actually. And then to take one question that leads to another question that leads to a third question and so on. But I must say, towards the end, I felt that actually there are some answers that we could do. And I think one of the big one is that we as men, we need to move away from this masculinity anger. You know, this whole thing about the manosphere, which is so much in fashion at the moment. Everyone's talking about, you know, the influence coming in particular from America, where you hear about Andrew Tate, Trump, and many others who are like saying, oh, it's super cool to be a man because we are in charge. You know, you even have this movement at the moment called the masculinist, Douglas Wilson. He says, men are created to exercise dominion over the earth, which includes, of course, women, but also nature. And he has also written, the sexual act cannot be made into an egalitarian pleasuring party. No, a man penetrates, conquers, colonizes, plants, whereas a woman receives, surrenders, and accepts. And I couldn't believe my eyes when I found out that these people there, they want to take away women's right to vote. Women just have to be in the family and to submit to their husbands and follow his words. That is masculinism. And it's flowering, it's blossoming in America at the moment. And it's coming over to Australia as well. Also, some statistics is showing that the young men see someone like Andrew Tate, who is a real, you know, a macho fellow, as a hero. The percentage of young men and boys who are looking up to him is shocking and frightening. And what I'm trying to say is we need to have something better to put in place here, because if we don't, the worst thing that will happen is that AI begins to take in these same values. And I can tell you, if we have an AI with masculinistic tendencies, we are going to be in trouble as, you know, as a species.
Do you see this current trend to be a backlash to the women's Me Too movement of maybe 10 years ago and the rethinking of the way that our society gets on with each other?
I do, you know, not just the Me Too movement, but the whole, you know, feminism movement, which has been going on for 100 years. What I spent some time on in the book is to go back in history and look into what happened when, because it's an interesting story. And I actually didn't realize how bad it was, you know, if you look at it from a woman's point of view, how terrible things have actually been. And I speak here, you know, at a personal level, because I've been through a divorce about 5-6 years ago. And I can tell you, I came out of that divorce very, very angry and really, really hateful towards women in general. Because I felt, just like the manosphere people are talking about, that they have acquired too much power. And you begin to feel that, you know, women are everywhere. They are taking over the universities. So if you have that sort of feeling as a man that you are already in the corner, being stamped on, being pushed in the gutter, then that's where the anger arises. Then that's when you see men enrage. That's when you begin to see, as we do in Australia, see on a weekly basis a man killing his partner or an ex-partner. Mm. Where does that rage come from? It comes when you are feeling absolutely you have lost it. And I must admit that I have been close to that feeling of having lost it, you know, where you just cannot see anything but violence ahead of you.
Well, it was obviously a moving experience all up, Mick. I was in the whole process, just, you know, how deep you've gone with it. I was interested in the process that you used, in that you brought people along with you.
Yeah.
How much of an assistance was that, or did it cause problems for you?
No, it was such a wonderful journey. Actually, you're right. We've been a whole team, I would say. I started with, you know, communicating with a few people who read and gave comments and so on. And then quickly the group grew to about 30 people I was emailing together with. And that again grew because I started putting certain chapters out on this blog I have on Substack, where I said, here's a chapter, what do you think? And people started writing to me with their, you know, views and comments and so on. Not a lot, but enough. So I got some views, I got some things to think about, and also quite often I got, you could say, the woman's perspective on things, which was really interesting. So there has been a bit of co-writing, you could call it, where I've listened to some very wise women and taking that in. I haven't mentioned their names in the text, but I have some of them I've given credit in the end of the book. And I think it's important to say that this book was certainly not written by me alone. I've also taken inspiration from ChatGPT. I've used ChatGPT as if it was, you know, someone I could ask questions, and also in particular about language. English is not my first language, so there's quite a few things where I've said, you know, I put a my kind of English text into ChatGPT and said, how would you write this in proper English? And then it comes out in a nice way. With this, it's my writing, but it's been, you know, translated properly, which is fantastic. You know, in the old days, you would have to pay someone to sit and do it, and I wouldn't, you know, have gotten anywhere with this book because I don't have that kind of money.
I am in awe, Mick. I know that I've got a smattering of a second language with French, but I have no way that I would undertake writing a book in a language other than my first language, English. So I'm very much in awe. Secondly, I want to say that I'm quite sure myself that what used to be called battered wives complex or battered women had a different meaning in the past. Usually it was downtrodden men who took to alcohol and then lashed out at the only thing that they could, which turned out to be their wives and families. Nowadays, it's something very different because it's against a movement in society. Having said those two comments, they're not questions, they're comments on the content of your book. Can you tell us how our listeners can get a copy, can read it? Is it available online?
It is indeed. I guess within days it'll be coming up if you just Google Man of Earth. And if you write masculinity, then I'm quite sure Google will get you there. But of course there are websites, and I think we'll put direct websites out in our climatesafety.info notes that we usually do. It's made in this way where it's print on demand. You can get it as an ebook. If you don't want trees to have been cut down and produce paper, you can get the ebook. Or you can order a print-on-demand book. That means I haven't been printing a lot of books in advance. Each book gets printed when it's bought. That's how it works. And then you get it surprisingly fast, like within a week. The place where that happens is a place called books.by, B-Y, and then / my name, which is Mick Eit. So books.by/Mick Eit. Is the address where you can buy the book.
Go on, spell Eit for us, please.
Yeah, so my name is M-I-K without the C, M-I-K, and then A-I-D-T, Mick Eit.
Excellent, Mick. More power to your elbow, mate.
Thank you. And yeah, let's see where it takes us. Can I say that, you know, at the same time, I'm also launching a website to go with it. It's called Service to Life. Earth. And there you will find more info about the book, but also about other initiatives that I'm building on in the same spirit as the book. Because what I didn't get to before, Colin, was to talk a little bit about the solutions that I'm finding. And I think the number one solution that we men have to realize is that we have to come down from this horse of being the dominating forces in society. We need to be absolutely understanding what equality means and what it means to live in harmony with other beings on the planet. And I'm not only talking about women here. I'm talking about animals, plants, and everything on planet Earth. And I think what men need to do is to become, I put it in one word, to become more gentle. And I do that in the inspiration of that we have the old expression, a gentleman. And a gentleman used to be, I mean, how do you perceive that word?
Well, exactly the way it is, not harming.
Yeah, exactly. Someone who's, you know, helping others. Someone who's being kind and polite. And I think that's where it starts. And then I also think that we as elder men need to be much more in charge when it comes to bringing up the next generations. Because right now the young men are lost. Yeah. There's no initiation for them, leading them into a society that is sort of, you know, saying, here's your responsibilities. This is what we expect of you as a man. The only thing that they find is stuff on social media, and the manosphere is shouting at them, you know, attracting them. That's, you know, masculinity is what it's all about, muscles and aggression. No, it's about time now that we come in with another model of thinking where we can, you know, begin to fix things, repair things, and have real integrity, honesty, real deep values. And some of them are very old-fashioned values that simply, you know, I think blend very well with the word gentleman.
I'm tempted to bring in the President of the United States, who found a way to celebrate 250 years of independence by having bare-knuckle fights on the lawn of the White House. That's a wonderful example of toxic masculinity, isn't it? That's part of the problem, surely.
The Gentle Manifesto. 1. Power must serve life. Human strength, wealth, knowledge, technology, and political power must be used to protect the conditions that allow life to flourish. 2. Law must defend the living world. Our laws must recognize responsibilities towards the climate, nature, human health, future generations, and the more than human world. 3. Companies must have a conscience by law. No corporation should be permitted to enrich itself by knowingly causing serious harm to people, communities, or the earth. Responsibility must be enforceable. 4. Technology must remain in service to life. Artificial intelligence and other powerful technologies must be developed with human accountability, democratic oversight, and a clear obligation to support life on Earth. 5. The gentleman acts. He meets the crises of his time with courage, gentleness, humility, honesty, and responsibility. He does not wait for someone else to become the adult in the room. These are the 5 points in the Gentle Manifesto. Perhaps you think this sounds impossible? Sure, corporate power is immense. Political systems move slowly. The forces benefiting from the present arrangement have money, lawyers, lobbyists, media influence, and access to government. Yes. This is all true. However, history also contains many arrangements that appeared permanent until people stopped treating them as permanent. As the saying goes, it always seems impossible until it's done. A movement begins when someone speaks a sentence that others recognize as true. The sentence becomes a symbol, it becomes a conversation. The conversation becomes a commitment. The commitment becomes a public record. The record becomes political pressure. The pressure becomes law. Then, years later, people look back and wonder how the previous arrangement was ever tolerated.
I can be a gentleman. I don't need a thunder. I don't need a wind. I listen to the silence. I carry my power with caring both hands. I let the whole world in and learn to understand. Life is calling, power it's a promise. The living earth holds us in her hands. Life is calling, I rise to answer. I let my strength serve life. Gentle as a man.
The gentleman will begin quietly. A badge on the coat. A digital emblem beneath the name of a corporate lawyer. Five men gathered around a table in a local pub. The musician explaining the manifesto from a stage. The chief executive placing the life test before his board. The teenager asking his father whether he is willing to wear the promise. The counselor introducing a motion. The parliamentarian holding up the badge while stating, "My constituents are demanding we give companies a conscience by law. In our party, we agree. We want to see that happen."
Gentle as a man.
No one owns the movement, so everyone can carry it. The old gentleman was recognized by his status. The new gentleman is recognized by his service. He has completed the inward journey and return to the world. He understands that maturity is more than knowing who he is. Maturity is answering for what happens next. Life is asking men what we will do with the strength, influence, and power already in our hands. The man of earth does not rise above others. He rises into responsibility. It is time to begin. Men, let's get to work.
Life is calling. Power is a promise. The living earth holds us in her hands. Life is calling. I rise to answer. I let my strength serve life. Gentle as a man.
The man of earth does not rise above others. He rises into responsibility. Men, let's get to work.
And can I say one more thing, which I think is really important to mention here? That is something that people don't seem to realize, just like they're not realizing the climate crisis. They're not realizing how fast AI is going to change our society in the next 5-10 years, mm-hmm. and what that means for everybody's economy, our job situations, and the rest of it. Predictions are that 40% of people who have a job today will lose that job in the next 5-10 years. Imagine that situation. I mean, it's not even imagining. Unless we have a third world war or something, that's what's in the pipeline now. And here comes the big question. Who is a man when his worth no longer comes from that authority it was when he had a job and was a provider and brought home the money and the rest of it? When he doesn't have, you know, a guaranteed place at the head of the table any longer? That's my question. And I think we men, we need to very quickly now look at that AI future that's coming and then begin to ask, okay, how do we fit in here?
How do we become men that have self-esteem, men that feel good about life, who are responsible, caring, and in service to life? I think that could begin with this, the slogan of that we become gentle men. And we, you know, begin a little, you could see it like a climate action movement, but with a different headline. It's not about climate. It is about climate and so much more, because this is about our community. It's about our partners and about future generations and the rest of it.
As such, Mick, it's not about climate, but it is about sustainable living.
Absolutely. It's all living, embedded.
Living in a comfortable, sustainable way into the future. And that doesn't include having a toxic man at the head of every family.
And my claim would be that this leads back to the question in a way that you asked before we even began, Tony, when you talked about the fossil fuel industry and how come that they allow this to happen. We're watching all these people die. We have to ask ourselves, and Climate Council actually did this in a LinkedIn post just recently. They asked, what is the antidote to addiction to profit? And I believe what I'm talking about here and what this book is talking about, that is the antidote to that addiction to profit. We need to come up with something that's better. And I think we can find it. I'm quite convinced.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't led to any increased happiness on the planet, I don't think, Mick, what we currently have. Maybe we, you know, leaving egos at the door or even before outside the door might be a good start to continue this.
Exactly. And then to realize that, you know, this masculinity aggression pattern that we see in society today, it's not something written in stone. It's not in our DNA. It's not in our biology even.
Yeah.
It's something that some people have invented and are trying to impress us with and make us all think or brainwash us with that's the only way to go. It's not. And I spent a couple of chapters in the book on just talking about biology, because I tried to explore how much of all this is really sort of, you know, deep down in us and very difficult to deal with because it's our biology. It turns out the answer is very, very little. It's culture. So that means we can change.
Yeah.
We just need to have that courage and the motivation and begin to talk about the need to change as men. And take some leadership, so when we come to these meetings, it's not 8 women in the room and 2 men any longer. No, let's see the men show up. Or if that doesn't work, then let's create some men's circles where we meet in the places where we like to, in a distillery, in a pub, you know, where there's alcohol, fine. Because it's about getting, you know, ourselves together and creating a new story in society. A new story about a new way of being a man.
Yeah, not with the aim of being critical of women. It's just to find that common ground and move out from there.
On the contrary, I am so much in awe and admiration for women. Whereas, you know, 5 years I hated them.
Yeah.
Now I'm back at that platform of saying I love women, but I also want to maintain an identity as a man. I don't want to be like a woman. I want to find my own space in the world. That's what I'm looking for.
I can recall back in my early 20s, I was working for a company that was Sainsbury's. It was a supermarket chain, but it was before it became a supermarket chain. It was a grocer's chain. And as such, we were face to face with the public. And I was one of many of the men who worked there, or young men who worked there, who were sent off for what was termed assertiveness training, because we didn't have enough push to work at that particular time in front of the public. We were too, retiring, if you like, and therefore we wouldn't sell the product that we were supposed to be. I've gone from that to the point where assertiveness has become the norm in the 21st century. And yes, you're right to bring out your book now. Yes, it's correct. Yes, we do need to pull back because we have become males. Way, way, way too assertive, Mick. So more power to you.
That's great to hear. So Colin, I'm all smiles here. And can I say, I hope to see you then at a little gathering that I'm organizing next week, on Thursday next week, at the Cellar Door. It's a place in Little Mallop Street, at 2 o'clock Thursday afternoon. It's very informal. You know, I'm not a rich man. I can't invite people in and hand out books and give you wine and so on. Everyone buys their own in the bar, but I will have some books there, and we'll have a great discussion about, you know, what I've been talking about here, which is, you know, finding a new masculinity, finding new meaning in a way, in a future where we're heading for AI and for ecological collapse. How we men are moving away from this old model of control and domination and over to something about equality, about responsibility, caring for our community, for each other, and being in service to life.
Now, is that the 6th of August, Mick, or the 13th?
No, next week. So the 13th of August, 2 o'clock.
Good. That is 2 o'clock on Thursday, the 13th of August, Mick.
That's right, exactly. And just a celebration where we, for the first time, you know, get together around this sort of story.
Good. Well, this is usually you saying this. That's all we've got for this half hour. It's not often we get to interview our co-hosts. I think this is the first time. But it has been remarkable. Thank you, Mick.
What are we going to be, Mick?
Yeah, what are we going to be? This is where you've got to ask us.
Oh, now that is interesting to be asked that question. I wasn't prepared for that. I would say it's very clear to me. We need to be in service to life.
In service to life?
I like it a lot.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll just say be gentlemanly.
Yeah, and be gentle.
Gentle as a man. I can be a gentleman. I don't need a thunder. I don't need a wind. I listen to the silence. I carry my power with caring both hands. I let the whole world in. Learn to understand. Life is calling, power it's a promise. The living earth holds us in her hands. Life is calling, I rise to answer. Gentle as a man, I own the harm I have caused. I stay when things get hard. I act when life is threatened. I do not turn away. I'm not chasing glory. I do not run through fear. I walk towards the trouble and make my purpose clear. Life is calling, power is a promise. The living earth holds us in her hands. Life is calling, I rise to answer. Gentle as a man. Love can carry anger. Care can still be strong. A steady hand can stop the harm and say, this can't go on.
man of Earth does not rise above others. He rises into responsibility. Men, let's get to work.